Hi, it's Alan Chartok in the Congressional Corner with Brad Hayes, one of our favorites here at WAMC, associate professor of political science at Union College, knows an awful lot. Let me take you to a place I know you like to go, and that's the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court right now, we saw something last week which was a little different. We saw Neil Gorsuch actually voting against his coalition of Republican-type justices on the court. And there are going to be a lot of cases coming up before that court. Janice on labor unions and other things. Do we think that this is just one effort on Gorsuch's part to say, don't count me out every time? Or do we really think that that he may be start to think for himself?
Well, I certainly think the latter, that he's thinking for himself, whether that manifests much in breaks with the other conservatives, I think, remains to be seen. I think that's much more unlikely. Look, this was a very kind of specific type of case that, you know, is fascinating in and of itself, right? It's about the removal of criminal aliens under the nation's immigration laws if an immigrant is convicted of what was an aggravated felony. And the problem was that Congress didn't really do a very good job of defining what counted as aggravated felony. They had some language in there about the threat or the use of physical force against persons or properties. But in terms of its operation, it was very vague. And so the court struck it down as being unconstitutionally vague.
But only by one vote.
But only by one vote with Gorsuch, right? Gorsuch joins the majority in part. He also concurs in part. And the concurring decision is also quite interesting that he wrote, because he writes this lengthy defense of vagueness as a constitutional violation from an originalist perspective, right? So a more conservative form of constitutional interpretation. And he's basically making an argument against Thomas in dissent, right? So there are two conservatives, both using originalism, coming to different kinds of conclusions, right? Which suggests a certain kind of independence in analysis, but and one that would lead to different results. With Gorsuch, though, There's a line that he uses. He says at one point that vague laws invite arbitrary power.
Yeah.
Right? Which some commentators have interpreted as kind of a nod or an indication that Gorsuch may end up being more libertarian than conservative. That, too, remains to be seen. But that will, in certain cases, end up putting Gorsuch in a different camp than kind of classic conservative legal thinkers.
The term you use, originalism, I wonder if you would define it for our audience.
Sure. Generally speaking, it's the idea that the Constitution should be interpreted either according to the original intentions of the framers of the Constitution or a constitutional provision, or according to the original public understanding of the document at the time of its framing. And conservatives have argued that this is an advantageous form of interpretation because it allows for meaning to be grounded at a specific moment in time, which fixes that meaning. And in constitutionalism, that's beneficial because then you have this firm agreement as to what the kind of foundational principles mean or the foundational structures mean. And then outside of that, if you want change, it has to go through the ordinary democratic process, or that you need to go through some kind of constitutional amendment process in order to change that constitutional meaning.
So you said that there's a difference between Gorsuch and Thomas in terms of their theories of originalism.
Well, I don't think they disagree much on the theory of originalism, but what this debate between the two of them helps demonstrate, and this has been demonstrated for quite some time, is that history only takes you so far, right? That there are certain areas that were not fully settled at the time.
Computers.
Well, no, right? I mean, so in other words, that like there are documents from the time of the Constitution's ratification, or say the ratification of the 14th Amendment in 1868, that suggest very different understandings of the Constitution. Different framers have different understandings. Interpreting and emphasizing different traditions at the time of ratification lead to different implications for that its application today. So in other words, it may narrow the bandwidth of possible interpretations, but there's still a lot of variance within the historical record. And as a consequence, the originalism takes you some distance, but it doesn't get you all the way to definite answers. And there's still a lot of interpretive work, which is where judicial power manifests.
So it's so interesting because, you know, as we all know, you weren't allowed to take notes in the Constitutional Convention, but Madison did. And there was also, of course, the famous papers that presaged the Constitutional Convention. But things are very limited in terms of how we would know exactly what they were thinking.
Yeah, and that's partly that shift to the original public understanding that I talked about before. It opens up source material. So when originalism was initially focused on the idea of interpreting through original intentions, you had to look at the intentions of the framers. And so that created opportunities to look at things like notes of the Constitutional Convention or notes from the ratifying conventions and the like. But there were lots of things we just simply didn't know. It was an incomplete historical record. But if you can broaden it out and you can look at like dictionaries from the time, what does this word mean? It gives you more source material for locating meaning, which can be beneficial where the historical record is incomplete, but it also essentially creates a diversity of source material that you then have to weigh. I mean, which is more valuable in which instance? There aren't answers to that other than what the justices give. And this debate between, Thomas and Gorsuch is an indication that originalism only gets you so far.
So as a Supreme Court scholar, we only have 2 minutes to do this in. It certainly would appear that if Trump serves out his full term, he'll get at least one or two more people onto the Supreme Court. The implications of that are...
Well, if in fact that were the case, I don't know if that's the case, right? We'll have to wait and see. But if in fact that were the case, then the implications would be, further ideological change on the bench, because if you're looking at the just the age of the justices, your Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, of course, is the oldest, then Kennedy, Ginsburg, of course, is among the more liberal justices on the court, would be replaced by somebody more conservative if Trump gets the nominee. But certainly even Kennedy, who's been a little bit more of a swing vote in certain areas, would be replaced by somebody that's more conservative. However, I think this is important, right, that I do not believe that Democrats will go willingly on that journey if, in fact, they take a majority in the Senate. My expectation is that they play the same game that the Republicans played, almost even if it happens immediately after the 2018 election.
Well, while I feel in sympathy with the idea that the Democrats could take the Senate, there doesn't seem to be much evidence that they will.
I think we're still 200 days from the election, so we have to let a little bit more play out. It's tough sledding for them, given the
number
terrain,
of seats they have to defend.
The number of seats they have to defend. But, the evidence that we've seen through special elections, the animation and enthusiasm in the Democratic base, Trump's polling numbers and the like are suggestive that they might be able to do it.
Interesting. What I've seen is in the polling that has been done, there isn't that much. When you ask the American people, are you more in favor of Democrats in Congress or Republicans? There's just about 6% in favor of the Democrats. That's not a lot.
That's actually a good number, actually. The 6 percentage points is pretty good in the generics. That is suggestive. So if we look at those real quickly, the current numbers, if we're looking at the races, are projecting around 220 for the Democrats coming out of 2018. Now, that isn't fixed, right? We still got to play the game. But that there is reason to believe, just applying that particular model, that is actually under predicting the Democratic outcome at present, and it might be actually a little bit closer to something like 230. That's a technical thing, but the point is that there are indicators that the Democratic wave may be coming.
Always wonderful to talk to a very enthusiastic and optimistic Brad Hayes in the Congressional Corner. Thank you so much, Brad.
Thanks, Alan.